Thanks for tuning in to the Next Level Church podcast. For more information, check out our website at nextlevelchurch.net.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Afternoon. Thank you for correcting me. Good afternoon. Excited for you guys to be here. If I haven't had a chance to meet you yet, my name is Rob, and I'm one of the pastors at Next Level Church. And if this is your first week at this service, you need to know that this is my favorite service of the day. This is the smallest service, but the loudest and most energetic, which I really appreciate. So I'm excited for you to experience that. Before we dive into our new series and to the talk for today, I need to take care of some family business. And so if this is your first time at Next Level, or you've been coming for a few weeks and this is not your church, feel free to tune this out. You can get on Facebook and completely zone out of this. But if Next Level is your church, I want to update you and catch up to speed with some things that are going on and some future planning things with our church. I have an advisory team that helps with the direction of the church and is the guardrails to make sure that we're staying on track with our budget and things that we've proposed. And I met with them about 2 months ago and discussed just some transitions and some kind of growing pains that have been a part of our church. And we came to the conclusion that one of the things that we need as a church is someone to help oversee the admin side of the church, the business side of the church world. And I know some of you are thinking there is no business to church. It's just praying and reading your Bible all day, and you only work one day a week. And I know that's what you think, but there's a lot more to it. And we do pray, we do read our Bibles, but there is a big business side of the church. The running of the staff, the casting of the vision, the hiring, the firing, the payroll, the paying bills, all of that stuff is a huge administration. It's just an administration weight. And our church has now gotten to the size where it is bigger than what I can do by myself. And currently, I spend about 80 to 90% of my time dealing with the business side of our church. And where I'm more gifted at is in the pastoral side of our church. And so our advisory team agreed and said that a position that we need pretty quickly is to get someone to be the director of admin, to oversee the business side of the church world, to free me up so that I can do the things that God has gifted and called me to do. And so we're all in agreement with this. The only issue is that this is a position that we didn't necessarily see coming when we proposed the budget and when we voted on the budget for 2016. So in order for us to go forward and hire this, we need some more money to come in than the budget that we proposed for 2016. And so in order to hire this position, we need some of you who maybe aren't currently giving or who are giving a little bit but could give more to feel called by God to help us get there. And the amount that we need is we need an additional, are you guys ready for this? $520 a week. That's it. That's all we need, an additional $520 a week. And if we get that in the next 3 weeks, it's going to let us know that our church is committed to this position, that we can handle taking on this salary position, and we'll go through, and hopefully by May, June time period, we'll be able to hire this position, which the advisory team is a big fan of and thinks is a good next move. And I'm excited and cannot wait to get to that place. But I wanted you to know this is where we're trying to get to, and we can't do it without your help, so I wanted to bring you on board and update you about this potential staff member. We need your help to get there. So if you would, this is all I'm asking you to do. If you would just take some time to pray about and just say, God, would you have us do something? Would you have us play a part? And if enough people play their part, we can quickly hit this goal because it is such an easy and manageable goal. It's something we could do and move forward. So I would love to encourage you to pray about that and take some time thinking about that. Now that all that's over, if you're a guest, pay back attention. This is the part for you to focus back on. I don't know what your week is like, but typically a week is pretty busy for me. And so often I can come into the church world and my mind's just focused on a million other things. And you guys are in the middle of your day, so you're probably already thinking about what you have to do later this evening. And you've got all sorts of things going on with you at the end of the week, so we're getting ready for the next week. And there's all these things going on in our mind. And so often we can come to church and we can kind of nod our heads, but we're not really here. And I don't want you just to be entertained. I don't want you just to hear something and say that was a good speech. What I want us to do is I want us to interact with God, and I want us to hear from God. And the only way to do that is to invite him and let him know that we want him to speak to us. We don't have to give God permission to speak. He can do whatever he wants, but we are allowing him. We're saying, hey, God, we're willing. We want you to speak to us. And so I'd like to lead you in a simple prayer. There's no magic to this prayer. It's just a simple prayer that says, God, would you speak to my heart? And would you give me the courage to do whatever you tell me to do? I just ask that you would take a few seconds just to pray that simple prayer. God, would you speak to my heart? And would you give me the courage to do whatever you tell us to do? Would you guys pray? And God, we just thank you for what you're going to do. We ask that you would do immeasurably more than we could ask or imagine, that you would speak to our hearts and our minds. And we just ask that you'd be louder than the other voices that are in our life, that you'd be louder than the distractions, and you'd just speak clearly. And God, would you give us the courage to just follow you, to obey you, to do whatever you tell us to do. And God, I'm just asking that the words of my mouth and the meditation of my heart will be acceptable in your sight. For Lord, you are my rock and my redeemer. And we ask this in Jesus' name. Amen. Well, today we kick off a brand new series entitled, What is Love? Baby, Don't Hurt Me. Now, if you were around in the 90s, there is, without a doubt, a video, a picture, a sketch, there is an image that comes to your mind when you hear the title to the series. If you did not grow up in the 90s, you have no idea what I'm talking about. And so if you did, there's something we need to get out of the way, because if we don't look at this, if we don't view this, there's some of you that will not be able to pay attention to anything that is said until we get this done. So to make sure we're all on the same page, check this out. Okay, now that that's out of the way, we can move on with this series. And some of you are like, that was so weird. What was that? What, you were either too old or too young to appreciate that period of the 90s. That is from a sketch from Saturday Night Live that it was an incredibly popular sketch. The first one had Jim Carrey in it. He was the guest host. Will Ferrell was in it. It was so popular, it went on to spur a movie called Night at the Roxbury. And I had some friends who were convinced that that was an actually good movie, and they convinced me to watch it. And I was trying to be a good friend, and so I allowed them to bring the movie into my house, and we watched it. And I just want to tell you, that movie tested our friendship. It is an awful movie. So don't see this image and go out and rent this. Don't look at it for Netflix or Redbox. It's a bad movie. Stay away from it. But that sketch from Saturday Night Live had this song playing, and I just knew if we didn't get that over, if we didn't at least address it, that some of you would just be sitting here the whole time saying, "What is love? Baby, don't hurt me." So I want to get that out of the way, and now we can move on. I know that when you hear the word love, typically what most of us think of is we think of a romantic love, something that happens between two people, especially in the early stages of their relationship. If you have a little age to you, you know that those feelings, those emotions of love, they tend to fade, but they come on really strong when the relationship is new, and then after a few years, they kind of go away. And when you hear love, we think of that time period where the relationship is fresh and new and sparks are flying. And what I want you to know is that this series is not just about that love at all. That love is too narrow of a definition of the word love. This is a series that is a broad idea of love. That love is something that is so much more than two people meeting and having some sparks fly and locking eyes with each other. And at that exact moment, the birds start singing a song and the clouds clear and it's a beautiful spring day. This is not just about romantic love. This is about the word love that encompasses everything that we do. Because see, I believe that you and I are wired to love, and not only to love, but we're wired to receive love. And we want this in our relationships. We want it just not in a dating or in a marriage. We want love in every relationship. We want love in our friendships. We want love with our family. If you have kids, you want your kids to love you and not just tolerate you. If you're a kid, you want your parents to love you. If you have neighbors and you like them, you want to have a close relationship with them. If you have extended family, you want to love them. If you have coworkers, there's this word love encompasses so much of what we do. And we are wired to want to have love. We're born in this world saying, I want to be loved. I want to know that I'm worthy of love. I want to know that someone out there cares about me. And we are also wired to give love. And we've all tried this. We've all experienced it where we said, hey, I think I like this person. I'm really starting to like this person. Or there's someone in my life and I want to have a relationship with them and I love them. Maybe we even said the words, I love you, Mom. I love you, Dad. I love you to your brothers or sisters. I love you to a friend. Maybe it's been, I love you to a boyfriend, girlfriend, or a significant other. That we've said those words, I love you. And it's something that we all desire, but something keeps getting in the way. And I just want to ask you a question real quick. And I know this is a little bit of a personal question. I don't know every one of you, you know, really well. So hopefully this is a trusting environment that you can answer this question. But I am betting that all of us have, because we have this desire to love, have tried to love, and at some point it went wrong. And we've experienced heartbreak, and we've experienced how a relationship ended. And it doesn't even have to be a romantic love. It could be a friendship. It could be, a coworker. It could be something where you said, I'm all in, but the relationship didn't work out. And would you just raise your hand? Have you ever experienced heartbreak? Have you ever experienced love gone wrong? Okay, that's most of us in here. If you didn't raise your hand, I'm going to assume it's because you've zoned out, and you're just thinking about, what is love? Baby, don't hurt me. Because I think all of us have experienced heartbreak. And typically when we experience heartbreak, we start to ask questions like, what is wrong with love? Maybe love is broken. Maybe there's something wrong with this idea, this image I have in my mind of love, because I've tried it, and I've tried it in multiple areas, and it just seems to always be broken. And I would say that it's not love that is broken. I would say that there's something else getting in the way of you giving and receiving the type of love that you really crave and you want. Now, if you're a Christian, then you would understand that our view of why this thing is broken, why love is broken, it comes from the very first book of the Bible. It's Genesis. And in Genesis, we learn that the first man was Adam, the first woman was Eve, and God said, hey, I'm going to give you a choice. You can obey me or disobey me. If you disobey me, you are going to get the knowledge of both good and evil. And Adam and Eve made the decision to disobey God, and at that instance, they took on this sin nature, this brokenness, this knowledge of both good and evil. And from that moment on, every human that was born in the image of God with the ability to love, but also with this brokenness. And this is why you try. You can start off loving someone so well, but after time goes by, something creeps in. It is selfishness, it is pride, it is issues. And most of the time, it is not just the other person, it is you. That you, in your best attempts and your best efforts, you give a version of love that is somewhat distorted and somewhat broken. Because we are all broken people. So if you would just humor me just for a second, would you just look at the person sitting next to you, even if you don't know them, would you just look at them and say, I am the problem? Just look at them right now and just say, I'm the problem. Listen, I know some of you are married and you misunderstood what I just said. I did not say, tell them they are the problem. I said, admit it, you are the problem. Okay? I'm the problem. Now, I've experienced a broken heart. I've experienced broken relationships. I've experienced when you thought something was going to work out one way and it didn't. And it leaves you asking all sorts of questions and feeling broken. And oftentimes, if we don't have someone come in and show us what real love is, it can lead us to some wrong conclusions. There are women who've experienced such heartbreak that they just say, all men are evil. Like, I just can't trust any men. Every man is a cheater. Every man is unfaithful. I don't ever want to experience that type of love again because I was so wounded. I was so heartbroken. I tried to love and they rejected my love or they hurt me and I just don't know if I can love again. For men, often when we give our hearts away and it gets broken, it causes us to resist intimacy. And intimacy is where you share exactly who you are and you're open and you say, hey, this is who I am. And for men, oftentimes, once they get rejected, they start to put up walls and say, if that's what love does, I may pursue a physical version of love, but I'm not going to open up and let anyone else know who I am because love just hurts. And here's what you need to understand. You were created to be loved and to love, but in order to love, you got to have some people in your life. And this is scary because every relationship can end in a broken heart. And some of you are thinking, I don't need people. I've got pets. I don't need anyone. Pets don't treat me like people. And that's for you. You're going to be that lady with 18 cats at your house. And if that fulfills you in life, more power to you. But for the rest of us, you are wired. You are created to be in relationship with human beings. You are wired to not just be known, but to have other people know you and allow you to know them. You are wired to love and to be loved. But we get in the way. Our sin gets in the way. Our issues, our problems get in the way. So wouldn't it be great if there was like a definition of love, something that we could point to, something that would say, okay, since I'm broken, let me work towards this better picture. Like, help me understand what love really is. Like, wouldn't it be awesome if there was something out there? Thankfully for us, there is something. There is a guide. There is a definition of love. It is the best definition I think that's ever been written. It is from an ancient text that's almost 2,000 years old, and it is from the scriptures, from a letter that a guy by the name of Paul wrote to a church in Corinth. Now, if you're a regular at Next Level Church, you hear us talk about Paul often. We say something about Paul, that Paul is a what? Help me out with this. P.T. Peer, or a primetime player. He is a major player in the New Testament. And the reason is because he wrote over half of what we call the New Testament, which is a part of our Bible. Not only that, though, he is the one that started going around the world and planting churches and telling people that had never heard about Jesus and what he has done. On one of his missionary journeys, he went to an area called Corinth. And Corinth was in Greece, and it is a real legitimate place. This isn't a fictitious story. This isn't something that you can't find on the map anywhere. You can actually go to Greece and visit ancient Corinth to this day. And if you go to ancient Greece and look up ancient Corinth, it'll look something like this. These are some of the ruins of the city of Corinth. This was a major booming city in Paul's day. And Paul plants a church. You can actually read about it in Acts chapter 18. And I hope that some of you will take me up on this. And this week you'll spend some time in Acts 18 and read about how he planted this church. Well, he plants this church, and then God leads him on to a new adventure. And he moves away from the church of Corinth. And while he's away, he gets an update on how the church in Corinth is going. And the message is not good. There are some major fractions in the church. There's some major disagreements about things. There's major disagreements about leadership and how things should happen. And isn't it crazy how we've evolved since then, and churches today don't have any drama like they did back then, and we don't have to worry about that at all, right? No, every church that you're a part of has that same fractions. It has some dissension. It has some issues because we're imperfect people. And Paul writes to them in 1 Corinthians and lets them know, hey, these issues, you got to work them out. There's also some immoral things going on in the church. There is a major issue. In fact, it is such a major issue. Paul addresses it and says, guys, you are doing something that not even pagans, not even those that people that are atheists that don't even believe in God, they don't even do what you are doing. Specifically, there were some men in the church whose moms, the mom's husband, so their dad, had passed away. And these men took it upon themselves to start dating and then marrying their own mom. And they're in relationship with one another. And Paul writes to them and says, guys, this is broken. This is jacked up. This is not an example of what you're supposed to do in the Christian life. And so Paul writes this letter to them. And part of the letter of Corinthians is rebuke. Part of the letter is encouragement. Part of the letter is vision casting. And we get to 1 Corinthians 13. And he paints this picture about what Christianity should be, about the whole thing. Like, everything can be summed up in this chapter. Now, if you grew up in the church, then you're probably familiar with 1 Corinthians 13. In fact, if you've ever been to a Christian wedding, it is almost a guarantee that 1 Corinthians 13 was read. And I want to survey here. How many of you have ever been to a Christian wedding where they read 1 Corinthians 13? Maybe it was at your own wedding, okay? So this is known as the love chapter. Now, the problem with viewing this as a love chapter is we often just read this when it comes time for someone to get married. But Paul wasn't writing to a couple who was about to get married. Paul was writing to a church. And this is a message that is so much bigger than just, hey, one day when you get married, or if you are married, you need to apply this. This is so much bigger than romantic love. This is something that we need to apply in all of our relationships. And so with that understanding, let's dive into 1 Corinthians chapter 13. We're going to start with verse 1 through 3. Paul writes to the church in Corinth, "If I speak in the tongues of men or of angels, but do not have love, I am only a resounding gong or a clanging cymbal. If I have the gift of prophecy and can fathom all mysteries and all knowledge, and if I have faith that can move mountains, but do not have love, I am nothing. If I give all I possess to the poor and give over my body to hardship, that I may boast, but do not have love, I gain nothing." Did you catch what Paul wrote? Paul's saying that you can be incredibly religious. You can even do some amazing spiritual things like prophesy or speak in these angelic tongues. You can do things that would impress people. You can suffer in the name of God. But if you do not have love, you are a resounding gong or a clanging cymbal. That if you just do things in the name of religion, if you just do things and check off things and say, hey, I'm just trying to follow these rules and I'm just doing this stuff to get on God's good side. You can do all this religious stuff, but if it doesn't have love, you're just adding to the noise of the world. And some of you, your experience in the church world has been just this high level of rules and religion. And for some of you, maybe it's because you grew up in a church that just preached, if you don't do this, then you're out. If you don't live this way, if you don't follow this commandment, you are out. And maybe some of you didn't grow up in that church, but at one point in your life you said, hey, I want to get my life right. Maybe I need to jump back into the church world. Maybe it's because you had kids and you said, hey, now it's time for me to dive into the church world. So you started going to church, and what you found was a religion that was based on these rules and regulations that said, if you don't follow these things to a T, you are out. And Paul is making an amazing point here, that the thing that separates Christianity from other religions is we don't start with following a set of rules. We start with love. that when you experience the love of God, that then compels you to follow Him and to obey Him. If you go out and you say, I'm just going to become a better person, I'm just going to add all these rules, what it does to you, that religion without a relationship of love, it adds a weight to you, and eventually that weight becomes so heavy, you just say, I cannot carry this anymore. I'm not good enough. I've tried on my own. I've tried to follow God. I've tried to do these things, and I just can't do it. There are some rules. There are some things that are a part of Christianity, but the rules and following come after the love. That you allow God to love you, and it inspires you to follow Him and to obey Him. So Paul says, if you do all these religious things, but you don't have love, you've gained nothing. Now, before we get into the definition of what love is, we need to take a quick detour, because there's something really important about love that we need to understand. Especially today, if you're a Christian, this is something that is so important for us as we continue on in this series. When it comes to love, love is not just some emotional thing that we feel. It's not just some picture that we gain from our society. That love is something that is so much bigger than that. And ultimately, we get what love is from one of Jesus' disciples. There's a guy by the name of John. He was one of Jesus' 12 disciples, and he followed closely with Jesus. And history tells us that he is the disciple with whom Jesus loved. So he was incredibly close with him. And he wrote a letter that we've titled 1 John. And in this, he writes all about love. Look at it with me. He says, "Dear friends, let us love one another, for love comes from God. Everyone who loves has been born of God and knows God. Whoever does not love does not know God, because God is," what's that next word?
Love.
Love. "This is how God showed His love among us. He sent His one and only Son into the world that we might live through Him. This is love, not that we love God, but that He loved us and sent His Son as an atoning sacrifice for our sins." When you truly know God, you truly know love. Why? Because God is love. And so in our brokenness, we've tried to give people a version of love, something that we think love is, but until we receive the love of God, every time we try to love someone, it's going to be somewhat perverted, it's going to be somewhat broken, our selfishness is going to get in the way. But John tells us that when you receive the love of God, and you receive a relationship with God, and you receive what God has done for you through His Son Jesus, who died on a cross, then you can give love. So it's kind of like this. I can't give you something that I've never received myself. Like, even if I wanted to, I couldn't give you $1 million. I could write a check for you, but it's going to bounce. Like, I don't have $1 million in my bank account. So I could try to give that to you, but it wouldn't work the way that it would if I had received $1 million. If I receive $1 million, then I can give it. And that's what John's saying with love. You can try to give a version of love. You're created in the image of God, so you can attempt to give some love. But until you receive the love of God, everything that you give is just going to be a little bit off. It's going to be a little bit tainted. It's going to be a little bit broken, because you're going to get in your own way. So in order to really give love, the love that you crave, the love that you desire, you've got to receive the love of God. So now that we understand that, let's go into Paul's definition of love, because he gets very specific on what love is. Look at what Paul says in 1 Corinthians 13, 4 through 8. He says, "Love is patient. Love is kind. It does not envy. It does not boast. It is not proud. It does not dishonor others. It is not self-seeking. It is not easily angered. It keeps no record of wrongs. Love does not delight in evil, but rejoices with the truth. It always protects, always trusts, always hopes, always perseveres. Love never fails." Well, now, if we combine what John said about love with what Paul is writing about love, what we know is that ultimately this isn't a definition of what love is. This is a definition of who God is. So would you guys humor me just for a second? This text is going to come on the screen again. And this time, would you read it out loud with me? But we're going to replace the word love with the name God. And every reference of love, when it says it, we're going to replace it with God. And we're going to see that this is a definition of who God is. 1 Corinthians 13, 4 through 8, with love being with the word God being in place of the word love. On the count of three, would you read it with me? 1, 2, 3. "God is patient. God is kind. God does not envy. God does not boast. God is not proud. God does not dishonor others. God is not self-seeking. God is not easily angered. God keeps no record of wrongs. God does not delight in evil, but rejoices with the truth. God always protects, always trusts, always hopes, always perseveres. God never fails." Over the next 5 weeks, what we're going to do is we're going to break down this verse. And this isn't a verse that is supposed to make you just better your marriage relationships or point to something better once you get married. This is a verse that is ultimately about God. And each week we're going to break down one of the descriptions or a couple of the descriptions over the next 5 weeks that are going to help us better understand who God is. And why is this so important? Because when you understand who God is and you receive that type of love, you then can give it and exchange it and return it to other people. So this definition that Paul gives us in 1 Corinthians 13, it starts off by saying simply, love is patient. And if that's the beginning of the definition of love, I can just tell you right away that every time I love someone, it's jacked up. I am not a very patient person at all. I am incredibly impatient. Like, I don't know if any of you play this game that I play, but every time I go to places like Walmart, you know, places that really test your patience, I play this game where I will jump into a checkout line and I will see where I would be if I had chosen a different line. And I race that line to see who can get through the fastest. And without fail, every time I pick a line, the line, whatever line I'm in, is the line that moves the slowest. And it is so frustrating and it tests my patience. And I get up there and I think, okay, I'm almost there. And then the 98-year-old lady writes a check for $1.98 beef jerky and it's like, no! And I'm so impatient. And yet the definition of love starts with love being patient. But I am incredibly impatient. You know what tests my patience? Every time I drive down Route 17. It is like, good golly, when are they going to finish this construction? Like, they've been building this road for the last 400 years. Like, just finish it already. And I'm sitting there in traffic and my patience is tested. And yet I know that if I'm going to love, I've got to be patient. And yet I'm not very patient. My kids last weekend, Easter weekend, we did an Easter egg hunt for them. And we hid a bunch of eggs out. And I mean, it was dozens of eggs. And it was just the two of them running around. And they ran around. And within seconds, they found dozens of eggs. I mean, it was the quickest I'd ever seen them move. And I was just so impressed. I was like, wow, I didn't know you guys could move that fast. Because whenever I ask you to get your shoes on for us to go somewhere, it takes days. And like, I'm like literally losing my patience. I say, hey, listen, we got to go somewhere. We got to leave right now. Can you put your shoes on? And it's like, are you kidding me? Why is it taking you so long? They're Velcro shoes. They're not even knots to tie. Like, just get the shoes on. Come on, we got to move. And it's like, I'm impatient with my kids. I have this urgency of, I got to get somewhere. I want what I want, and I want it now, and I want you because I'm Mr. Vain. That's another 90s song for those of you that remember 90s music. For others of you, that was just weird. I'm sorry. I love this definition of patience, though. Patience is not simply the ability to wait. It's how we behave while we're waiting. Patience is not simply the ability to wait. It's how we behave while we're waiting. This definition of love, it is so challenging and countercultural to who we are, because the definition of love says love is patient. And today we live in a culture that is all about instant gratification. Everything that we have, we want it now, we want it quickly. If you're my age, I'm 37, if you're my age or older, you remember what it's like to wait on things. If you missed a ball game and wanted to see the score, back in the day before the internet, you had to wait for the paper to come out. And you had to look up in the paper the box score. Now, you can see the score of the game on your phone before the game's even over. It's like, wow, they won. How did they know that? How many of you have Netflix? Netflix is amazing. But before Netflix, we would have to watch a TV program and then wait an entire week for the next episode. And it was like painful, and it was like, that takes patience. But today you can binge watch an entire series over a weekend. Everything in our culture is saying, hey, if you want something, just grab it right now. But what is the definition of love? The definition of love starts with, you've got to be patient. I wonder how different your relationships would be in if you showed a little bit of patience. Have you ever jumped into a relationship too fast thinking it was going to be the one, that this one was going to be different? And after a couple weeks, you just realize, hey, there's something off. This wasn't what I thought it was going to be. Now I'm in over my head. If you're single and you have a desire to not be single, like, isn't it hard to wait and to say, hey, I know that there's something better for me. I know I'm going to get married one day, but right now I'm in this series of singleness, the season of singleness, and it's so difficult to be patient. And oftentimes, if you're not careful, you'll rush in and make decisions that will impact the rest of your life because you are struggling with being patient in the season that you're in right now. If you're a married couple and you want to have kids and you've ever experienced that where you can't have kids, like, isn't it difficult to wait and to say, I don't understand, God. I want it now. I want what I want. Can you just give it to me now? But what is love? Love is patient. Love is not instant. Love takes time. And ultimately, we know that love is patient because it is a description of God. So when we hear that love is patient, what we really need to hear is God is patient. And why is this so important? Because we don't have a God who's up in heaven that's looking down at us saying, would you just get your act together? You've been doing this thing for long enough. I'm so tired of waiting on you. Would you just move faster? Would you just get there? How many times are you going to make that same mistake? That is not the God that we have. We have a God who is patient with us, who is patiently waiting for us and loving us to become more like Him. Love is patient. When I was a kid, my parents inflicted upon me, I mean introduced me to a lot of kids' Christian songs. And I don't know if you grew up in that type of household, but we had a record player, and it's just these Christian songs we played all the time. And I'm currently in counseling to unravel how this affected my life. And if you didn't experience that side, if you didn't grow up in a home like that, maybe you can't relate to what I'm saying. So I want to inflict on you, I mean introduce to you, one of the songs that was on repeat at our house on the record player that we had. It goes like this. Check this out.
There was a snail called Herbert who was so very slow. He caused a lot of traffic jams wherever he would go. The ants were always getting mad, and the beetles, they would fume. But Herb would always poke along and sing this little tune. Have patience, don't be in such a hurry. When you get impatient, you only start to worry. Remember that God is patient too, and think of all the times when others have to wait for you.
That was my childhood. You now know how to pray for your pastor. That song, though, it constantly comes into my mind when I am doing things that I don't want to do, while I'm waiting on things, and when I'm waiting on God, I just hear this song, have patience, don't be in such a hurry. Remember that God is patient with you. I think ultimately when we look at this verse, what we need to understand is that Paul is not writing to a married couple and saying, hey, you need to be patient with each other. He's writing to a group of Christians and saying, ultimately, the way that you love people, it has to have patience, because patience is a reflection of who God is. So I think there's two takeaways. I think there's two big ideas that we can get from this text, that as Paul was saying this to a group of people, to real-life Christians dealing with real-life problems, I think there's two things that we can take away from this. Number one is be patient through the process. Be patient through the process. If you're taking notes, this is a place where you could start. But Paul gives us some great commands, and he gives us some great encouragement in the letter of Corinthians. But ultimately, he's writing to a group of people that are really jacked up. And he never says to them, you are so messed up, you are outside of the love of God. Instead, he points them back to who God is. And says, listen, I know you're going through some struggles. I know you haven't improved fast enough. I know that you've still got some issues in your life. But let's get back focused on God, because it is only through a relationship with God that your life can change. Here's a big idea, something I want you to wrap your mind around. You cannot microwave spiritual growth. You cannot microwave spiritual growth. And if you've been a Christian for any amount of time, there will be a point in your life where you just say, why aren't I better? Why don't I love God more? Why did I make that same mistake last week? It's a mistake that I've been just making constantly, and I should be better. I should know better. I shouldn't go there. I shouldn't do that. I shouldn't say that. Why aren't I better? Well, the reason is because when you follow God, you're not instantly changed. It is a process. And you keep following God, and you keep doing what God has called you to do, and you watch as He changes you from the inside out. But if you want God to just instantly, radically change your life, He is capable of doing that, but that is different than the way that I've ever seen God work. The way that God works is he works through a process. And some of you have said, listen, I just don't read the Bible anymore because I read it for 1 week and it didn't radically change my life. Well, you've abandoned the process. And some of you said, I don't pray anymore because I prayed one time and God didn't answer my prayer instantly. Well, you've abandoned the process. That Bible reading and prayer and going to church and being in relationship with other Christians, it is all a part of the process on how God changes you. And specifically, the way that you are changed is by investing in your relationship with God. And Paul makes this incredibly clear. In another one of his letters that he wrote to the church in Galatia, Paul said this in Galatians 5, 22 through 23, but the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace. What's that next word?
Patience.
Kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control. Against such things there is no law. What is Paul saying? The fruit of the Spirit. The way that you can tell that you've really dug into your relationship with God and that you're really growing in a relationship with God is that a relationship with God produces fruit. And when you spend time with God and you pour in your relationship with God, there is a fruit that comes from the Spirit of God that lives inside of you. And that fruit then produces patience. So patience doesn't come when you wake up tomorrow and say, today I'm going to be more patient with my kids. That's not the way it works. Patience comes when you endure the process. When you put yourself in a place to experience the love of God, He changes you from the inside out. I love this quote by Pastor Mark Batterson. He says, we want things to happen at the speed of light, but in God's kingdom, things happen at the speed of a seed. And spiritual growth happens at the speed of a seed, that the Spirit of God, the fruit of the Spirit, if you've ever planted anything, it starts with a seed, and you've got to water it, and you've got to allow sunshine to hit it, and you've got to nurture that, and eventually it produces fruit. And it is the same thing in your relationship with God. I know you've got some issues. I know you've got some struggles, but you got to be patient in the process. That part of being patient is allowing God to love you and not love some future, better, perfect version of you. God loves you for who you are right now, and He's loving you to become better. He's loving you, but you've got to be patient through the process. The second thing is this, people. People. If 1 Corinthians is telling us anything, it says that love is patient. And if you want to experience love, you've got to experience it by being in relationship with other people. And if you're going to be in relationship with other people, you've got to be patient. Because every person you know is jacked up. And every person you know is broken and has their own issues. And so often when it comes to love, what we do is we meet someone and we say, they have potential. Now if I can just change some of the things I don't like about them, they'll become the perfect person for me. But you can't force someone to change. And so often, especially in marriage relationships, we think, one day he'll get there. One day he'll dress like I want him to dress. And one day he'll do the chores when I want him to do them. And one day, if I could just control him, if I could just manipulate him, if I could just change who he is, then he'll become someone I can love. But that's not the way love works. Love is patient. And so you wait on people. And you're patient. And ultimately, this is so important for you. Because ultimately, when you are patient with other people, what are you doing? You are showing them the love of God. When you are patient with your kids, what are you modeling for them? The love of God. When you are patient with your spouse, what are you doing for them? You are showing them the love of God. And why is this so important? Because we don't want people to be impatient with us. I don't want people judging me and saying, hey, you're not perfect yet. You're not who I want you to be. I want people to love me for who I am and be patient with me as I'm growing and learning. This is incredibly important because the way that you love people is ultimately a reflection of the love that you've received from God. God is love. God is patient. It reminds me of this age-old story about two frogs who fell into a tub of cream. And they were swimming around for a little bit, and one of the frogs started to get tired, and he just said to himself, this is pointless. This just is not getting us anywhere. And so the frog closed his eyes and just sank down to the bottom and passed away. The other frog said, I don't know why I would give up. Like, I know the swimming isn't getting us anywhere, but I have nothing else to do. Let me just keep paddling. Let me just keep seeing. I don't know what's going to happen. And so the frog kept paddling his feet over and over again. Eventually, he swam for so long that he turned this cream into butter, and the butter was a more solid surface, and he was able to stand on the butter and hop out of the tub. And guys, that is what it means to be patient. You're patient with the process. You're patient with people. You just keep swimming, like Dory said in Finding Nemo. Just keep swimming. Just keep swimming. You just keep doing what God's called you to do. You keep pursuing God. You keep coming to church. You keep reading your Bible. You keep praying. You keep loving people well. And you're patient through it all. Why? Because God is patient with you. I want to give you a point of application. This is what you can do from this. Now, if you're not willing to put some work into this, this is just going to be a talk that it's not going to change anything. But if you're willing to, if you'll take this next step, this has potential to do something in your life. This week, I want you to ask someone you love the following questions. If you're married, you can ask your spouse. If you're not married, ask your kids or ask a friend or ask a sibling, ask a coworker. But this week, do this. Do you feel I am patient with you? Why or why not? And just wait for them to answer. And listen to them. And when they tell you the answer, don't punch them in the face. Don't get defensive. Don't say, well, let me tell you how you're wrong. Like, just listen to it. Do you feel I'm patient with you? Why or why not? And let them answer. And that leads to a second question. After they answer, what process can we implement to help us create patience in our relationship? What process can we implement to help us create patience in our relationship? What is it that we can do as a family? What is it that we can do as a married couple? What is it that I can do as a mom or a dad? What is it that I can do? How can we process this together? What can we do to add more patience into our life? Why is it so important to have more patience in your life? Because ultimately you're experiencing the love of God. Because God is love, and love is patient. So this week, take those steps of application and allow God to love you through it. Would you guys pray with me? God, thank you for your love for us. Thank you that you don't love a future version of us, that you love us for who we are. And we just ask, God, right now that you would be speaking into our hearts and our minds, and that, God, you would just be challenging us, challenging who we are. God, it's so difficult to love others well. Our selfishness gets in the way, and we just ask, God, right now that you would give us the strength to die to ourselves, that we would receive your perfect love and allow that perfect love to change who we are. We're thankful, God. We know that you can get us there, and so we're just asking that you'd help us to be patient as we receive your love, and that we would take that love and we would be a model to the rest of the world what true love really is. We thank you, Lord, for what you're going to do. We thank you for the next few moments as we get to worship you. In Jesus' name.
We hope you've enjoyed and learned from today's podcast. If you'd like to connect with us further, you can check out our website, nextlevelchurch.net, or find us on Facebook or Twitter.